15 years ago this month, the Cato Institute launched the Cato Daily Podcast, and to mark the occasion, we're hoping to give you a token of our appreciation and ask a small favor. Visit cato.org/cdp15 to get a pair of vinyl Cato Daily Podcast stickers in the mail and give one of them to a friend who might enjoy timely libertarian perspectives on issues of the day. That website again is cato.org/cdp15. And now more than ever, thank you for listening. This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Wednesday, May 26, 2021. I'm Caleb Brown. Odds are good that you've given away lots of data about yourself on various apps on your smartphone, so you wouldn't have a problem if the government bought that data, would you? Cato's Julian Sanchez and Patrick Eddington detail some of the problems with the government merely purchasing data about Americans.
The three of us know that the government really shouldn't be spying on Americans, people with certain constitutional rights, without a warrant. And yet we have become aware on several occasions that the feds have been simply purchasing this data that Americans give away freely to fast food apps like McDonald's and Popeyes and any number of other things. And my thought is, well, you know, good on you guys for just paying for the data that we're just giving away. But how ought we to think about the government making use of this data that's freely available that, you know, publications like the New York Times have purchased to show us a picture of something occurring out in public? How should we think about the government purchasing that data and making use of it?
You know, one thing I think that's worth noting is that the federal statute governing electronic surveillance for criminal investigative purposes, that's the Electronic Communications Privacy Act, specifically lays out rules for the acquisition by the government of non-content information, what's often called metadata. So things like the information about a phone conversation, but also often quite detailed location information that's generated by cell phones and by a lot of apps that use location. And that statute essentially says this kind of non-content information may be shared by communications providers with other private entities, which often have a legitimate reason to be interested in, especially aggregate information of that sort, but prohibits them from sharing it directly with the government without a court order. The idea was clear that, look, when the government gets this kind of information, the intention of Congress was they're supposed to go through the particular process laid out and obtain judicial authorization. And, you know, essentially what increasingly is happening is they've exploited a loophole here where the statute says, well, communication service providers, electronic communication service providers, and what the law calls remote computing service providers, can't share this directly with the government. But whoops, if you pass it off to another third-party private entity, a data broker, that is not itself a communications provider, well, they're not covered by that legal requirement, and then the government can get the information from them. So, you know, I think it ought to be a little dismaying that, you know, Congress pretty clearly had an intent that they expressed for how the government should go about obtaining these categories of information. And, you know, and because of the rise of these third-party data brokers, perhaps, you know, the authors of a statute written in the mid-80s didn't anticipate in the form it currently exists, that rule is being circumvented. This is, you know, pretty transparently an end run around limitations Congress tried to impose.
All right. So Pat, Julian has established the data broker loophole for federal surveillance. Should we close the data broker loophole? Because I can imagine federal intelligence agencies or people at the Pentagon saying, oh, no, we can't. You close this loophole, we're going to go dark. You close this data broker loophole. Yeah. Look, we do good things with that information. Yes. Many lives have been saved with the information that's been provided by these data brokers. Real patriots, for the most part. You know, if this is an end run around the intent of the law, should that loophole just be closed?
Well, I would suggest that the entire third party doctrine should be rejected by the Supreme Court. That would be my macro solution to all of this. But sure, I mean, you know, what Julian has described here is actually the subject of the letter that Senator Wyden sent over to DOD on May 13th, and was the subject of this Vice News piece that kind of got us all going on this, whereby, and this is literally just from the first bullet point that Wyden has in his letter, DIA, that's the Defense Intelligence Agency, recently informed my office that they have adopted the position that the Fourth Amendment and the Supreme Court holdings in the Carpenter case, and we can talk about that case in a moment, do not apply to data about Americans that the government buys and only apply to data that the government acquires via compulsion. The Carpenter case, of course, I think, and Julian will correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that was from 2017, where the court essentially said that someone's cell phone related data, and specifically here, location related data, is not something that can be essentially acquired outside of a Fourth Amendment related process in court. And what DOD has done here, and certainly if DIA is doing this, it means that other components are almost certainly doing it as well, is basically taking the position that no, this is stuff we can just buy. You know, we're good to go here. There's really, you know, nothing to see. Let's just all move along. And so what Wyden is doing, and he has legislation specifically called the Fourth Amendment is Not for Sale Act, which is designed to basically shut down this kind of capability. Obviously, if the legislation were passed, it wouldn't just apply to DOD. It would apply across the board to pretty much every federal agency and department. What I think is important to kind of focus on here is that this particular issue involves a DOD directive 5240.01, which is the overarching directive that governs intelligence collection by the Department of Defense. And we don't have time in this particular podcast for me to go into, you know, all the details on this thing. But if you actually were to go online and take a look at this 56-page DOD directive, they have given themselves quite a few carve-outs here to collect data on Americans, particularly overseas, oftentimes using the phrase incidental collection, things of that nature. So this is just one authority, by the way, under which DOD can try to collect data on Americans. During the George Floyd protest, we learned only in August of last year, essentially, that they had used Air Force RC-26B intelligence collection aircraft over multiple American cities, utilizing both electro-optical and infrared imagery to try to keep track of protesters. So there's just a lot in play here with respect to DOD, potential DOD intelligence collection.
And I'm imagining, you know, when we look at our maps on our phones and we see a blue dot that represents us, I'm imagining a federal agency or the DOD seeing hundreds of blue dots moving in concert down a city street at a particular time, and making connections that no individual within those groups could ever make about, and drawing conclusions about those associations. That is, I participated in a protest 40 feet from this really bad guy. What does that say about me? What could the government conclude about me based upon that information? It seems that this is a problem that obviously Ron Wyden wants to highlight, and some other members of Congress want to highlight. But Americans, for the most part, don't really seem to care that much.
You know, I think it may just be that Americans don't know that much. I think, you know, usually we you know, use something like Google Maps or any app that has some kind of location functionality, and we think of this as something that is you know, fundamentally being used by that company. And maybe we say, well, I'm willing to let Google know, you know, my location for the purpose of providing me with this service, and are a lot less conscious that often that data is being bundled and sold off to other parties. It's, you know, often referenced in some oblique way in the, you know, on page 28 of an impenetrable legalese terms of service agreement, but it doesn't make it particularly transparent what those data flows look like. I should note, you know, it's not just protesters. There are, you know, concerns, I think, about targeting of particular religious and racial groups. A couple of the apps that we know the military has been acquiring location information from include a Muslim prayer app called Muslim Pro, and a Muslim dating app called Muslim Mingle. Part of the chilling effect here is that there are particular, applications that are targeting particular groups, and those seem to be ones that the government has a particular interest in a way I think is unsettling. Now, of course, often the kind of data we're talking about is anonymized because often, data brokers are dealing with companies that are interested in this kind of information in the aggregate. You know, they want to know things about patterns of movement for various reasons, as opposed to trying to track an individual. But the thing about location data is that in effect, it can't really be fully anonymized unless it is completely aggregated. You don't have to put my name on a location data stream to see, who is this person that lives at Julian's house or goes to sleep at Julian's house and then goes to work at the Cato Institute. It's at the end of the day, it is inherently identifiable.
And there are, of course, methods that folks have developed to try to essentially de-anonymize folks. And in fact, there's quite a bit of literature, on that particular project. But I do think this is a good time to point out that at Cato, we're not sitting on the sidelines on this. Earlier this month, we filed a lawsuit in federal court, a FOIA, Freedom of Information Act lawsuit, that pertains to DOD Directive 5200.27. I love all these numbers. It's just another one of these bureaucratic things. But in essence, that particular directive has been around since the Vietnam era, and it was actually utilized as the authority during the Vietnam War to spy on the National Lawyers Guild and other organizations that were basically trying to assist service members to get out of the draft or to file for conscientious objective status, et cetera, et cetera. And more recently, in the Bush 43 administration, that authority was utilized to spy on protesters, anti-war protesters, anti-nuclear protesters. This kind of data was essentially compiled, and there was ultimately a DODIG report on this. And supposedly, that particular program, which took place under the so-called counterintelligence field activity, the Talon program, was allegedly shut down in 2007. I strongly suspect that it was resurrected in some fashion and simply rebranded in some way. So that's one of the reasons why we've got this lawsuit in.
So a couple other features of the Wyden bill, I think, are worth commenting on. We talked about location information, which is one kind of communications metadata that is really clearly meant to be covered by the structure of the Electronic Communications Privacy Act. And so this sort of closes that loophole of pass it off to a third party and then give it to the government. But it also bars commercial acquisition of information that is obtained, what the bill calls illegitimately or in violation of the terms of service of a website. And this is pretty clearly directed at companies like Clearview AI, which in violation of the policies of social media companies and platforms, essentially scrape data from those websites, amassing this large database of photographs of individuals, which could then be used to essentially do face recognition. You take a photo and then you track it to the individual that corresponds to. Of course, law enforcement intelligence agencies have become extremely interested in that. And so the idea here is, look, this is a database often built, again, in sort of violation of the expectations of privacy created by platforms that say you're not allowed to scrape us for purposes like this, and that the government can't essentially acquire indirectly stuff that in ways that would be illegitimate for it to directly, although how exactly that will end up being interpreted is sort of an open question. Presumably, they're going to have to now make a determination when information has been acquired in violation of the terms of service of potentially a whole lot of different sites. One other thing worth mentioning, though, is that this legislation also closes an important loophole that exists in a different important loophole that exists in the Electronic Communications Privacy Act, which there's a section called 2511 that carves out from the Electronic Communications Privacy Act the acquisition of foreign intelligence information from international or foreign communications networks that does not constitute electronic surveillance. So there's a definition of electronic surveillance under the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act that covers things like the acquisition of contents of a communication. But obtaining things like location data or other kinds of communications metadata does not, in terms of the statute, qualify as electronic surveillance. So what this little carve-out that went really unnoticed, I think, by privacy folks, at least for quite a while, is say, look, if you're doing this for foreign intelligence purposes, then you don't actually have to follow the ECPA rules. But if it's not electronic surveillance, you may not have to follow the normal FISA rules either. You may just be able to ask the telecommunications company, hey, we'd like you to hand over this data because there's this foreign intelligence carve out without actually going through the process of compelling that data. And so the Wyden bill also says, look, you know, that's not going to fly anymore. There's still the carve out. There's still the ECPA criminal surveillance statute does not govern foreign intelligence surveillance, but the carve out is now limited to collection pursuant to an express statutory authority. So if you want to get this data for foreign intelligence purposes, you can do that, but you've got to use the process spelled out in the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. You can't just sort of say, hey, we'd like you to hand over this data without us having to go through judicial approval.
Julian Sanchez is a senior fellow at the Cato Institute. Patrick Eddington is a research fellow at Cato. This month marks the 15th anniversary of the Cato Daily Podcast. In appreciation to our listeners, we have a small gift for you. Visit cato.org/cdp15 to learn more.